Welcome to Storytime by Chava. We are up to chapter 79 of the book Once Upon a Journey, volume 2 by Rabbi Zalman Ritterman. This chapter is called A Call to the Soul. Within a short time, Maximilian's estates showed signs of great improvement. The three Jewish merchants who had accepted the responsibility of running his properties had succeeded beyond expectation. They built new flour mills and inns, and a string of profitable factories. The debts that had built up over the years began to melt away. Maximilian could already see that his lands would soon become a source of great wealth. He happily informed his father of the positive changes. King Ferdinand found himself torn between his growing respect for the Jews, their honesty and skills, and the church's fierce hatred towards them. Each day, priests would arrive at his palace to remind him how evil and dangerous the Jews were to his kingdom and religion. It was not only the priests in his own kingdom who spoke so terribly about the Jews. The same message was being repeated in all surrounding kingdoms. The source of this cruel campaign against the Jews was none other than the Pope himself, a Jew-hater who spread his bitter, poisonous views wherever they could reach. At the next grand meeting of the leaders and advisors to the kingdom, a clash erupted between the king's approach to the Jews and the church's fierce opinions. The representative of the church openly demanded that the king expel every single Jew from his kingdom. This time, it was clear that he meant business. Before the entire gathering, he proudly informed the king that the Pope had already given his blessing for this move, and he expected the demand to be met. The warning was unmistakable. If the king did not agree, the church, backed by the powerful Pope, would work against him. "There are two urgent reasons for driving out the Jews," the minister explained. "First, the Jews bring nothing but damage to our kingdom. They are parasites who do not bring us any benefit and rely on the Christian population to support them. The Jews are always on the lookout for any successful Christian business. Then they get involved with clever, evil ways and end up draining all the money from their Christian neighbors. They cheat and lie. They grow richer while the Christians grow poorer. We must drive them out in order to protect the Christians from these evil people." "The second reason for ordering the Jews to leave the country," the minister continued, "is that many Jews will not want to leave or will be unable to leave. Instead, they will be forced to convert. This way, we will save the souls of thousands of these awful sinners and bring them true redemption. It is our duty as faithful Christians to convert the Jews." The king and his sons rose to defend the Jews from the first claim. Each prince in turn told the gathering how their estates were managed excellently and honestly by Jews. "For years on end," exclaimed Prince Maximilian, "my estates were run by a Christian who brought me nothing but great losses due to his thievery. Now that I have hired three Jewish managers, they have reduced all my debts and are well on the way to providing me with large gains. They have been exceptionally honest and generous in all their ways." No matter how many logical explanations the king and his sons offered, they could not calm the raging hatred against the Jews that filled the room. The leading members of the church and the many officials and nobles who supported them were not willing to listen to reason. They demanded that the King Ferdinand expel the Jews. The king knew he would face serious problems if he refused. Officially, the king ran the kingdom, but the church had vast and powerful connections throughout his country and in the neighboring lands as well. In truth, the church was more powerful than the king. And so, in the end, King Ferdinand had no choice but to agree. A royal decree was immediately sent to the heads of all the Jewish communities with two commands. The Jewish leaders were first instructed to arrange for all their people to leave the kingdom within a 2-year period. After that deadline, no Jew would be allowed to set foot in the lands of Bohemia. The second part of the decree was even more dreadful. The king ordered the Jewish leaders to instruct their communities that they must attend their local churches each Sunday morning in order to listen to the priests' speeches. When the heads of the proud community received the decree, they hurried to the home of the Maharal. The tzaddik read the king's order and his expression grew very serious. He told the community leaders to announce an emergency gathering of all Jews in Prague, men, women, and children alike. The gathering will be held the following morning, immediately after Shacharis, outside the main shul. Messengers went from home to home, personally instructing each family to attend this important meeting. The Jews of Prague at this point knew nothing about the decree, and they were puzzled as to why the Maharal had ordered such an unusual event. Nevertheless, they realized from the urgent and unusual way in which the meeting was called that something very worrying had occurred. That night, a giant wooden platform was built in the courtyard of the main shul of Prague. Word of this platform spread throughout the community and added to the sense of fear. In the morning, right after Shacharis, the courtyard and the surrounding streets were crammed tight with people. The men stood on one side and the women and young children on the other. A hush fell over the entire crowd as the Maharal suddenly appeared. He stepped briskly out of the Beis Medrash, still wearing his talis and tefillin. The people were shocked to see him carrying a Sefer Torah. The head of the community, Rav Moshe Meisels, followed the Maharal. Like the Rav, he wore his talis and tefillin, and he too carried a Sefer Torah. The leading Rabbanim and Rosh Yeshiva then emerged from the shul, also carrying Sefer Torah. The crowd, filled with worry and anticipation, waited in silence to see what would happen next. Shema Yisroel, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echod. All the Jews of Prague trembled as their beloved Rav broke the heavy silence with a heaven-piercing cry of Shema Yisroel. The Maharal then broke into loud weeping. His cries penetrated the hearts of all present, and they wept along with him. They were now certain that something terrible, they still did not know what, was threatening them. Listen, Yidden, the Maharal called out in a loud voice. With the cry of Shema Yisroel, our forefathers went to battle against the soldiers of the mighty Greek Empire. They fought against those who wished to prevent them from observing the Torah, those who wished to defile the holy Beis HaMikdash, and they won. With the cry of Shema Yisroel, the Jewish people have thrown themselves into fire to save themselves from being forced by those who hate them to act against the holy Torah. With our cry of Shema Yisroel, we will light the flame of Mesiras Nefesh in our hearts. Our Shema Yisroel will give us the strength to stand firm against every type of trouble. The tension was unbearable. Nobody doubted that a dreadful decree had been made against them. Trembling, they waited for the Maharal to continue. The Gentile nation in which we live, its people and its king, are friendly to us. However, the priests have turned themselves into our bitter enemies. They have declared war against us, the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The Maharal then read the decree of King Ferdinand that he had received the day before. At the end of the decree, there was a warning of awful punishments for any Jewish leader who dared to instruct his community to disobey the decree. A terrible cry escaped the throats of the entire Jewish community, adults and children alike. They wept and wailed openly in the streets of Prague. The tremendous noise seemed to rise up to the heavens.